Chapter 18. County Borders. Absolutely fascinating chat with this morning's FedEx driver. He came to collect my rucksack from the B&B I was staying at Manningtree, a pokey little place staffed by a portly little family just off Key Street. Trip advice, the towels smell of mince. Still, I'd slept well, and I was in good cheer as the driver came to collect my rucksack. We exchanged pleasantries. I asked about van driving, he asked about my walk, and I explained I was using his company's services to ferry my bag onward each day, an ingenious form of kick and chase. He frowned a little, and we had a brief chat about costs, and to cut a long story down a bit, he explained that doing this every day would cost me close to £900 over the course of the walk, money I just don't have, or rather I do have, it's just not liquid right now. So I sent him on his way, and I am now carrying my bags again, which, in a daft way, I prefer. I thank my lucky stars I told my assistant to buy the most expensive rucky she could find. Peace of mind. Manningtree sits slap bang on the border between Suffolk and Essex. A new dawn, a new county, I say out loud as I begin to walk. And though crossing a county border is always a thrilling experience, I feel sad to leave Suffolk behind. There's a lot of twaddle spoken about the rivalry between Suffolk and my own county, Norfolk, but I don't buy into it. Our real enemies are those counties further afield with designs on our loyal band of repeat visit tourists, your Devons, your Cumbrias, your Northumberlands, your Waleses. It is they who spread rumours about us. Not least, and let's confront this head-on because it's the elephant in the room, inbreeding. I have lived in East Anglia for over half a century, and I have never, never been made aware of, witnessed, or been involved in so much as a single act of human inbreeding. When it comes to allowing the gene pool to stagnate, we simply do not have a charge to answer. All right, you might say, it doesn't happen now, but it used to, and fair enough, it did used to. But what people fail to recognise is that East Anglia is in a remote part of the country. There's very little passing traffic there. So in centuries gone by, before technological advances such as the motor car or Tinder made it easy for people to make more genetically advisable choices, it was inevitable that on a cold winter's night, when everyone else in the house was asleep, a randy brother might walk down the corridor and gently knock on his sister's door. No, if you ask me, I say let all the peoples of East Anglia come together to fight this threat from rival counties as one, because it's together, by doctoring their Wikipedia entries, by leaving negative TripAdvisor reviews for hotels we haven't visited, that we can ensure our homeland retains its reputation as one of the world's premier destinations for competitively priced caravanning breaks, and thanks to Coleman's Empire, mustard holidays. I'd go further. Life in Suffolk is hard. So let's give our neighbours a break. I guess the most obvious option would be to subsume Suffolk into Norfolk. The new super county, Norfolk, a compound word made by taking the Nor from Norfolk and the folk from Suffolk, would seek to spread Norfolk's better educational standards and, let's not dodge this, the slightly advanced culture to our newest members. And with the name Suffolk consigned to the history books, before being quietly removed altogether in future editions, maybe, just maybe, our disadvantaged neighbours would have a fighting chance of a better future. To give me energy for the day ahead, I prepared my own take on the glucose sachets now favoured by endurance athletes and bin men with particularly long rounds. A far cry from the overpriced equivalents of the big brands, mine comprise of a spoonful of jam tightly bound in cling film. Whenever my performance starts to flag, I will just place one of the pellets, known colloquially as jam bombs, into my mouth. As I bite down, the jam bomb, not to be confused with the French word jambon, meaning ham, will detonate, its payload of thick fruit plasma oozing onto my tongue and into the mouth or mouths of my grateful taste buds. Cheers, Al. Love your radio show, by the way. If my calculations are correct, then I'll feel a brief high, followed by a sustained period of extra energy. When the slump comes, and it will come, I'll simply repeat and continue. Some sports scientists believe this kind of short-term jam dosing is bad for your health. Then again, sports scientists say a lot of things. It doesn't make them right. How much actual science is involved in being a sports scientist anyway? I mean them no disrespect, but they're PE teachers with laptops. I have breakfasted well on porridge and eggs, not in the same bowl, so I know it'll be some time before I need to turn to one of my small sugary assistants. And so it proves. My mouth not triggering the first controlled explosion until I've been on the road a full 40 minutes. And then, kaboom! I'm taken back by how much better I feel and make a mental note to set up a call with the head of British Athletics. With top athletes constantly searching for even the most marginal gains, it's pretty obvious to me that jam, a product not yet on the World Anti-Doping Agency's list of banned substances, could be of serious interest to Team GB, or the grammatically accurate GB's team. With one bomb consumed, I quickly find myself reaching for the next. In an ideal world, they'd be taken on an as-and-when basis, but because they're one of the nicest things ever made, this is impossible. I want to stop, need to stop, but stop I cannot. Within 15 minutes, the jam is no more. All that remains is a mouthful of spent cling film pieces and a nagging sense of self-loathing. And then crash. The tiredness is overwhelming. I feel like a gorilla that's been shot with a tranquilizer dart, or just extremely tired. I try to power through, but I'm being naive. "Alan, you're being naive," I say out loud, but I'm so exhausted it just comes out as, "I have been naive," accompanied by some dribble. Every step is like wading through, I don't know, treacle? Fibogel? Camembert? Warm camembert? Basically, it's very hard. I stagger into the home of God, the Church of St. Andrew in the village of Mark's Tay, and make my way to a pew at the front. There's a service going on, but that's not my concern right now, and it's not something that bothers me. I lie down, tell the vicar to shush, and fall soundly asleep. 20 minutes later, I wake with a scream, a recurring nightmare about petrol prices, bid farewell to the congregation, and get on my way. Left, right, left, right, left, right. That's not my legs, by the way. It's my arms. It sounds weird, but my legs are actually doing the opposite. Right, left, right, left, right, left. And the combination of the two somehow leads to the act of walking. Like the old parlour game of patting your head while rubbing your balls, walking requires a real feat of coordination. I try not to overthink it. A boy at Cubs once told me that if you focus too hard on something that's confusing, you go insane. It's a fate I'm keen to avoid. As I head towards the district of Braintree, I begin to muse on the word Braintree. You can imagine it, can't you? A brain tree. Like an apple tree, except instead of apples, it bears human brains. I could think of a few broadcasters who could do with one of them in their garden. And yes, the amusing thought sustains me for a short time, helping to keep my ragged mind off the pain of walking. Of course it did. It's a funny thought. But is it going to make you laugh for any more than, what, 20 or 25 minutes? Probably not. And yes, you can muster up additional laughs by thinking up variants on the brain tree theme. I imagine there are towns called Spleenbush, Lung Shrub, Bowel Plant, etc., etc., and picture what the corresponding plants would look like. Funny, sure. And great, you've bought yourself another 20 minutes of amusement. But beyond that? No, I could feel my spirits slumping. Perhaps I'd bitten off more walk than I could chew. I snap myself out of it to notice I'm approaching Braintree. Is it me, or is there a feeling of anticipation in the air? The man walking a dog, the boy riding a bike, the lady driving a tractor, I genuinely did see this. Do they seem somehow expectant? I start to see dribs and drabs of people standing by the side of the road. 4 women on the left, a drib, 2 teens on the right, a drab. Soon the lines of people are thickening like a lorry driver's arteries. What's going on here today? A marathon, perhaps? An LGBT parade? A marathon's probably more likely, given the part of the world we're in. But either way, I can feel a huge sense of relief that the crowds are not here for Alan Partridge. Let me be clear, this walk is not about me, and the very suggestion that I might have dreamed it all up with one eye on a spin-off range of high-quality yet affordable merchandise featuring Alan Partridge hiking socks, bivy bags, jerry cans and flints is actually quite offensive. No, dear listener, we'll leave that kind of ugly careerism to the likes of Tony Robinson, brackets Channel 4's Walking Through History, and John Inverdale, brackets Channel 5's Feel the Power, a speedboating series in which John drives dead fast across the Solent with no top on. This one wasn't actually commissioned, but I know for a fact that Inverdale pitched it, so my point still stands, close brackets. My reasons for doing this walk are intensely personal, i.e. footsteps of father. And much though I sense the crowd would love it, that doesn't mean signing autographs or posing for selfies. I put on my headphones, crank my iPhone up to full blast, and nod approvingly. Dr. Alban, I say to myself, spot on. It's crucial for a rambler to get their song choice right. I live alone, so often find myself marching back and forth to pop songs. Stop the Cavalry by Jonah Louie, Portsmouth by Mike Oldfield, and The Safety Dance by Men Without Hats all lend themselves to a brisk hop, two, three, four, But as marching songs go, you cannot beat Float On by Modest House, brackets, a 2004 track I heard at an ice rink, because the singer sounds like Brian Ferry, whom I know from Tory party fundraisers. Time was I would have plumped for Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins. On long drives, my friend Eamon Holmes and I would play the Top Gun soundtrack at high volume. One would pretend to be Maverick, the other Goose. And we'd don Ray-Bans, talk in American accents, and keep saying we were the best of the best. But I just can't listen to this song now. Not for any painful memories, it's just a terrible piece of music. No, all band it must be, and all band it is. With the Doctor's distinctive Afro-European beats coursing through my veins, blocking out the crowds is a breeze. Admittedly, I do wave at them occasionally, but that's primarily a health and safety thing to ensure that they don't get in my way. And while my moonwalk does elicit a cheer, I only really do it to relieve cramp in the soles of my feet. But then something occurs to me. Maybe I've got this all wrong. I'm not saying this is the case. But what if these crowds are for me? Let's consider the facts. There are no marathon runners. There are no floats with flamboyant homosexuals in outrageous costumes. I love those guys. But there is an Alan Partridge. I didn't set out to publicise my walk, but what if someone else did? For many years, Dave Clifton was my arch-enemy, and in the late 90s and early noughties, not a day went by when I didn't wish him dead. In more recent times, however, we've buried the hatchet. We don't go drinking together because Dave's a big-time sauce junkie, and we don't go for meals together because that would be weird, but I do know that he now considers me a friend. Footnote. Indeed, he texted me last month with a message that simply said, "You are my friend." Odd. He also happens to be filling in for me on Mid-Morning Matters. Yes, there's every possibility. These crowds are his doing. Brackets, Dave, you're a good man. Whatever people say, you're a good, good man. Stay sober. Close brackets. Well, I hardly need tell you this is most unexpected, but I'll be honest, it feels good. All the naysayers, the doubters, the sniffers, the tutters, and that's just the staff at North Norfolk Digital, must now surely be opening their mouths wide, dislocating their jaws and praying their gag reflex isn't too trigger-happy as they now swallow their words. With everything now clear, I feel a smile beginning to form in and around the curls of my mouth. I wave. Two girls wave back. I wink at some chaps. The chaps fire back a thumbs up, each. I raise my arms and wave the wave of a guy who lands planes. And that, too, is met in kind. Yeah, I think, you love this, don't you? I do a little jog and pretend to play an imaginary cricket stroke into the crowd, then cap it off with a laugh and a get-out-of-here wave. Then I do a series of rapid points at various members of the crowd while mouthing, "You, you, you, you," before shouting, "Who loves you, baby?" I feel light on my feet, buoyant, cock of the frigging walk. I stand, hands on hips, letting them admire my stance, body and confidence. Then I'm off again. A little showbiz jog to the side, before leaning one way and cupping a hand to my ear, and then the other side, jog, lean, cup. And now I'm striding down the highway, my hands above my head, spanking each other rhythmically to the drumbeat Roger Taylor designed for Queen's pop song We Will Rock You. Dum dum chick, dum dum chick. I sometimes have a bit of a downer on the general public. They can be thick and uncultured. Footnote, the Great British Bake Off. But not this lot. This lot are amazing. I feel like I want to give them something to say thanks, a memento of some kind. I once saw a tennis player throw his sweatbands into the stands after victory, and whilst I thought it was disgusting and wanted to be sick, his fans seemed to love it. I don't have any sweatbands, so I rummage around in my rucksack and find a few things I can throw. As I ransack the rucksack, I see a banner, held aloft by two housewives wearing a lot of denim. It clearly bears the Sport Relief logo. Yep, thought this might happen, I think, as I rifle through my bag. A lot of celebrities volunteer their time for Sport Relief, and my CV makes me just the kind of person they might ask to complete a televised endurance event for faraway orphans. This particular year, the organisers didn't come calling their busy people, and who can expect them to reply to every letter, but I'm happy to make that clear. "I'm not doing it for Sport Relief," I say, really rooting in the depths of my sack, "so you might want to remove the banner." "Aye?" chirped the denim girls in unison. That's literally what they said. But then this is Essex, and I'm aware they might not have had the benefit of a formal education. I smile and respond in a friendly manner, still searching for items to give away to the well-wishers. "Get rid of that banner, now!" I look down again. Ah, good. Clothes. And I stand up, ready to hurl a memento into the crowd. "But he'll be here in a minute," they reply, again in annoying unison. I'd assumed they were identical twins, but one of them's black. "Who?" I say as I pull my arm back, ready to launch a pair of my underpants high into the sky for a lucky punter to keep. And that's when I notice that there isn't just one Sport Relief banner. There are loads of them. In fact, all over the place I can now see people carrying Sport Relief collection buckets. "Steve Backshall!" The words hit me just as my arm completes its journey. Before I can register what this means, the scrunts have been flung. And as I watch them arc into a group of unsuspecting spectators, I grasp what this means. These people aren't here for me. They're here to support a Sport Relief walk being done by Steve Backshall, and I, Partridge, am effectively shelling them with unders. I wince and feel the tentacles of embarrassment beginning to climb my tummy like ivy. For those of you who don't know him, and I have to admit I'm not massively familiar with the guy myself, Steve Backshall is a TV presenter who makes animal programs for kids. His USP is that he films in exotic, often dangerous jungle locations, and while no shoot would ever be allowed to take place without a rigorous risk assessment that reduces the chance of anything going wrong to more or less zero, I've no doubt the shows appear extremely impressive, especially to the children at whom they're aimed. But despite the attraction of having a surname that sounds like a knitted garment worn by a grandma, Backshall's audience can only take him so far. Marooned in the no-man's land between Bear Grylls and Terry Nutkins, his career has hit a glass ceiling. Finding out that Backshall is due to arrive any minute, I decide to leave. Steve's a young fella trying to make his way in broadcasting, and even though it's not something that particularly bothers me, I can imagine how important the adulation of these people is to his self-esteem. The last thing he needs is an 800-pound gorilla stealing his thunder. The last thing he needs is an 800-pound gorilla stealing his thunder. I do track down the organisers and give them my number. As the senior broadcaster, I'd be happy for Steve to call if he needs any advice on how to handle the media, how to grow his brand, or indeed how to knock some of the rough edges off his presenting style. But with that done, it's time to get on my way. I make a quick foray into the crowd and collect my undies. "Sorry, thanks, sorry, bye," have a quick altercation with a middle-aged woman, and continue south. Footnote. The pants weren't dirty, they were unwashed. Big difference, sweetheart.